You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, this is another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. I'm Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today's date is the 21st of June, 2025, quite late. Now, by the time this is put out on the air, things may have changed, because I'm going to do something a little different here. I don't usually talk about current events in The Orthodox Nationalist. Occasionally I do, but it's not very common. But in this case, the war with Iran, it has such implications for everything that people like me have been fighting for 30, 35 years or more, that I can't not include it in the repertoire here. But things are changing very quickly. So this is as of 11 o'clock at night, June 21st, 2025. And I want to start off with a quote from the great Eustace Mullins. The younger guys may not know him. I knew him. He wrote a review of my first book, a kind of neutral, The Third Rome. And he was, of course, his NS 100%. He was a biographer of and a friend of, a student of Ezra Pound, the great poet. And he says the following about the Jews. This is actually from his The New History of the Jews, published in 1968. Of course, Jewish culture doesn't really exist, nor has it ever existed, because a criminal conspiracy is not a culture. The Greeks perfected the greatest civilization by making the rights of the individual more important than the power of the central government. The Jews, on the other hand, were able to perpetuate a vicious criminal state by destroying the rights of the individual. The Jew has always lived as the faceless member of a collective state, and he has no feeling for the individual. If the individual protests against the state, he must be destroyed. Now, of course, Mullins is exaggerating here. He's writing this in the midst of the Cold War, and he's really, you know, making reference to the Soviet Union and the Jewish domination of the Soviet Union. Of course, Plato did not agree with this. But the more important part is that Jews in Gentile society really end up being a mafia organization. If you haven't been listening to the Solzhenitsyn podcast that I've been doing on 200 Years Together with Pete Cajones, please, it's apparently blowing up. Everyone's talking about it, I guess. I don't know. I don't look at that stuff, but, and there's a lot more that's going to be done with that in the future. And one of the things in that discussion of that book I keep going back to is that wherever the Jews go, they act as if they were a mafia organization. And they look at the central authority very much like any mafia would look at the central organization of their home country. That is not an exaggeration. It seems to be the case. Now, for a long time, at least for the past few years, I've applied the insights of psychology to political science. There is political psychology as a field, but it's, you know, like everything in academia, it's abused to nothing. But more specifically, I've talked about the notion of projection, a neurotic defense mechanism, especially for those who are ideologically or financially tied to the present ruling class. Such people can't deal with being a party to evil behavior. They come to insist that their enemies are the ones doing it. And one of the best examples, I say this because I found one of the best examples of this from the Jerusalem Post This is the purest example of projection I think I've ever seen. It came out on June 18th by Attar Porat with the extremely pompous title, Israel is the Effective Leader of the West. That title alone should tell you what's happening here. And this is what this fool said. Now, as Iran's regime teeters on the brink of collapse, the tables are turning. Millions are fleeing Tehran, and the mullahs, in desperation, resort to crude propaganda, recycling cheap fakes and footage from Israel strikes against the Houthis to falsely claim victories in Tel Aviv. Iran's internet shutdowns and bans on WhatsApp reflect the regime in existential crisis, with reports indicating that the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has delegated power to the Revolutionary Guards Council, a sign of eternal disarray. Now, just that paragraph is, there's no way this is a coincidence. Every syllable applies to Israel. None of them really apply to Iran. There is no part of this, there's not a word that he utters here that the Israelis either aren't doing or suffering. It is not a coincidence. The projecting neurotic is unaware of his projection. You have to be. Someone in denial can't be aware that he's in denial, or he's not in denial. It's the transference of a present vice or even a crisis onto someone else as if to absolve oneself of it. And I think that this kind of rhetoric, this kind of clearly projective rhetoric, shows Israel to be what this man says Iran is. Now, I've listed hundreds of examples over the years of projection. There's no way this is a coincidence, but this may be the purest example because it's every sentence. But he doesn't stop there. He goes further. He builds on this, his earlier falsehoods, to theorize about his implications, and he says, Israel's actions have created a tipping point, with the potential collapse of Iran's regime rivaling the fall of the Soviet Union in geopolitical significance, a transformative moment that could reshape the global order. Well, the fall of the USSR led to an almost totally Jewish takeover, the Jewish oligarchy of 1990s Russia. And if Iran were to fall, Israeli oligarchs would do the same. Beyond that, it's clear that Iran, China, and Russia, as I've been saying for decades, alone stand in the way of total Jewish and oligarchic control. The neurotic mind is delusional. All mental illnesses are based on delusion. This is about substituting a different reality for what's right in front of your face, especially if it goes against a lifetime of ideology or propaganda. The civilized world stands with Iran. Any rational person stands with Iran. At this point, 2025, to think that there is any excuse for anyone to buy into the war propaganda that's being spouted on all news channels today is an outrage. We seem to be, Americans seem to be unable to learn anything from its history. Americans aren't a historical people. Few learned anything from the lies that were promoted in the 1990s concerning Iraq, or even in the early 2000s concerning Afghanistan. Anyone brings up nuclear weapons here needs to just be shut the hell up. They're idiots, and there's no other word that you can use. It's conceivable that they're just stupid. But there isn't a third option. Now the lies are exposed about each and every war the U.S. has been involved in. Going back to the 19th century, the new lies are still taken as truth and no one notices a pattern. And that too, by the way, requires a psychological explanation. On the other hand, those domestic American members of the Axis of Resistance is certainly a growing phenomenon. President Trump, in terms of foreign policy, somehow he thinks that everything he's been doing aligns with America First. I don't think he knows what that phrase means. He started off by rejecting any ceasefire once this first started, saying that he's after a, quote, complete give-up from Iran. I think he means surrender. He said, I'm not in too much of a mood to negotiate. As if this is even the business of the U.S. in the first place. He was then asked by the media if he was worried about American bases being targeted, and they are quite vulnerable. Here's how he responded. We'll come down so hard if they do anything to our people. We'll come down so hard. The gloves are off. I think they know not to touch our troops. Now, if you've been listening to my Daily Nationalist, or listening to me, or reading me for any length of time, you know that that's begging the question. Because that response to an Iranian attack would be from those very bases. Iran has stated, as it should, that it will strike American bases in the region if the U.S. attacks Iranian territory. That's normal self-defense and is legitimate no matter who you are. If Trump orders his decrepit armed forces to attack Iran, it will only be because he has been brainwashed by Israeli operatives. Israel is the only reason the U.S. is in the Mideast. Almost everything you're hearing, now I know some of these articles aren't as bad as the one I just cited. Some are better than others. But clearly a pattern is discernible. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz, he bragged on Twitter about the strike on the Iranian television station. I was on Monday the 16th, and he said, the Iranian regime's propaganda and incitement broadcasting authority was attacked by the IDF after a widespread evacuation of residents in the area. This is the garbage that's being pumped into the American mainstream as I'm saying this. Although, I kind of like the idea that it's acceptable to bomb media outlets if someone decides that they're propaganda. Or, of course, it's a double standard. The limits here, the limits of such a view only refer to the Jews. I know I've used this example in the past, but when the Chinese exploded their first nuclear bomb in 1964, they were either in the midst of or just finishing their great leap forward, where about 40 million Chinese were killed deliberately, or at least indirectly through artificial famines. No one batted an eye. The Iranians, who have done no such thing, are seen as this pirates if they come across a nuclear weapon. They aren't aggressive. The U.S. is. The Israelis are. But of course, if anyone says to you that this is about nuclear weapons, you just, you know, slap them if you can get away with it. That's probably the best response. The nuclear deal, I guess, not that it was anyone else's business, but it was working. You know, what's happening in Gaza has nothing to do with Hamas or hostages, or really, you know, anything like that. It was, you know, they haven't been able to dislodge Hamas. They could have negotiated a hostage deal. No, it's about Israeli hegemony. It's about the justification, almost regularization, normalization of genocide only of the enemies of the Jews to show that no ethical code ever applies to them. It's not about self-defense. It's about land and power. To think that this attack, the missile attack on Iran, was preemptive, is a mockery of that word. It shows that the person using it doesn't know what it means and is just parroting what he's heard from somewhere else. I've said from the beginning, you know, I spent quite a bit of time. I rejected the idea that the Israelis deliberately allowed the Hamas attack to happen. It's absolutely untrue. They may have dropped the ball, and I went into great detail. I don't like that theory, and I've given many reasons as to why it's false. But one of the reasons it's false is that part of the purpose of Hamas' attack was to draw other actors into the fray. I mean, there was a genocide going on in Gaza before this. since 2006, if not before. Have been going on quite a bit in the West Bank. Maybe more slowly than it is now. But bringing in other actors was part of Hamas' strategy. The war expanded into the West Bank, Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, and of course now Iran. Well, it was either that or the Arabs in the Gaza Strip slowly die of starvation, which is exactly what the agenda was. No one's talking about Turkey, and no one's talking about Pakistan. See, the way that even some, you know, non-professional alternative writers, they don't get a lot of the complexity either. The Turks are willing to fight for the Iranians. They've always had, generally speaking, have had positive certainly have positive trade relationships. Going back a long time, Turkey has its own missile production, which it's now increasing. It's not being discussed anywhere because it interferes with the simplistic narratives of the regime. It tells me that NATO is in serious trouble, as are the American bases in Turkey. Erdogan has condemned Israeli policy almost from the beginning here, and now has ramped up this rhetoric in favor of the Iranians. So it's highly doubtful that he would allow the U.S. to move men or materiel through his territory. Accusing Israel of state terrorism from a NATO member is not, that's an extraordinary matter. Of course, it's an obvious truth. But these are the issues that aren't, and you know, don't count Turkey out if there's any widening of this war. Pakistan, extremely important. They have begun, because they border Iran, they've begun sending military equipment there. Eyewitnesses have reported the transportation of military cargo, missiles, drones, and the border regions, Rimdan, Sadovan, a few other places, non-nuclear explosives. The day before this attack, Pakistani Prime Minister Sharif had a telephone conversation, I should say the day of the attack, had a telephone conversation with Pezeshkian, the president of Iran, and assured him of Pakistan's full support. Now, Pakistan denies this, but so what? That's pretty normal in diplomacy. People haven't spoken a lot about Pakistan when it comes to the Middle East, because it's not a Middle Eastern country. But it's starting to realize it has a responsibility now that Syria has been taken over by the Israelis. Now, Pakistan and China and Turkey, but definitely Pakistan and China are coordinating closely with Tehran, and they're offering many advantages if Tel Aviv was to continue to escalate this. As this became, you know, as war clouds were gathering, the Iranian foreign minister, Araghchi, went to his counterpart in China, Wang Yi. That was on the 14th. That was the same time day when Pezeshkian was granted his, his phone call with Pakistani Prime Minister, assuring him of support. It stands firmly with the Iranian people in this critical hour. But then the reports emerged immediately of Pakistani military delegations arriving in Tehran in the midst of these hostilities. China has approved the transfer of its Beidou navigation satellite system, the BDS, which is their GPS. That's been transferred to Iran. That's been formalized in a memorandum of understanding. Not, you know, something below a treaty, but, and that's going to dramatically enhance the precision of Iranian missile strikes. And it looks like China is positioning itself to supply Iran in the same way the U.S. supplied Ukraine and Israel. Whatever disagreements Pakistan and Iran had in the past over the Jaish al-Adl group, which I think is another version of ISIS, another Western creation, since they do operate on Iranian territory, that's nothing compared to what's happening today. What's happening, not just in the current war, but the implications that this war has. But this is nothing new. People think this is shocking because they've never come across this before. Pakistan and China have been close with Iran for a very long time. The Belt and Road Initiative relies to a great extent on the stability of Iran, Islamabad, the Gwadar, and other ports. These are key arteries in this movement. In the recent blow-up between Pakistan and India, the Chinese showed its J-10, HQ-9 air defense. The J-10 fighter jet and the HQ-9 air defense system. The testing ground for Chinese weapons. So you have a parallel circumstance here. China's going to support Iran for a whole bunch of reasons, but one of which is it's a crucial supporter of China's energy needs and trade operations, and has been for a very long time. In other words, what Israel's doing, it's forging alliances that may not have existed or not nearly as strong as is occurring today. Whatever minor rivalries existed are gone in the midst of all of this. For a very long time, I've talked about the nuclear issue as a red herring. It's a childish excuse. It's at a third grade level. Iran would be wise to develop nuclear weapons, but it rejects the use of them. First of all, it doesn't want them. It's very non-Islamic because, in their various writings against nuclear weapons, which, you know, these idiots don't know about, it kills too many innocent people. But they also don't need them. These make-believe analysts have been gloating about Israel's surprise attack and the decapitation strategy of Iranian officials. But on the other hand, I don't want to hear the phrase World War III again. That phrase has been used in every other article concerning this issue for the last 10 years. I'm sick of it. We have to be totally immune to that appeal by now. You know, it's like clickbait at this point. Donald Trump stated that the U.S. and Israel have control of the skies over Iran, which is a lie. I don't think Trump really knows, since he's fairly isolated now, working only with the Israelis. Trump even lost it right on Truth Social, threatening Khamenei with assassination. A lot of these guys believe their own propaganda over time. Everything else is censored. The Israelis do not have aerial supremacy whatsoever. But now that Gabbard and Hegseth have been sidelined, Trump is isolated, which is another way of saying that he's totally controlled by the Israelis, and he can't be trusted. Now, for my listeners, this is nothing new. I've said this for many, many years. The Iranians have been dug in for a very long time waiting for this. We'll get into some of the explicit reasons why the decapitation worked, did kill a bunch of important people, but the Iranians are literally dug in. 200 underground missile bases at a minimum, all deeply buried under the various mountain ranges. Iran's been preparing for war with the West since 1979. You go through its air assets. You're talking about maybe 250 combat aircraft spread over its Air Force, the Republican Guard Air Corps, and the Army Air Corps, and others. This is not an easy target. The Israelis are telling the world that Iran is down to 2,000 missiles, as it is now running out of missiles. The Israelis are. It's an obvious lie. The U.S. is out of ammunition. I said when they started giving all of their stock away to the Ukrainians, what's going to happen when they need to go somewhere else? This was before the Hamas incident in October. I said, what's going to happen? What is left? The Iranians, of course, anticipated a war of attrition. It's a national socialist state. It is dedicated to autarky, as much self-sufficiency as possible. It has a massive stockpile of missiles for this reason. Hezbollah did the same thing. Iran's missile bases are impregnable. not to mention spread out over an area the size of most of Europe. I want to quote Mark Gaffney, who I think I've quoted here before. He says, "Consider that during the first Gulf War, despite absolute control of the skies, the U.S. military utterly failed to stop the Iraqis from launching their Scuds. Indeed, over the course of that war, the U.S. failed to score even one confirmed kill of a mobile Scud launcher. That was a long time ago. The U.S. is not in a position to do that anymore." Afterwards, the Pentagon buried this embarrassing detail in a footnote, but the Iranians are thorough and they don't miss a thing. I've been watching these Israeli clips, and they're always very vague, they're always very grainy, it could be anything. One of them is labeled the destruction of an Iranian missile launcher, but there's no evidence that it was a missile launcher or anything. I don't know what it was. Just because it's labeled that way, I guess the normies will believe it is. The system that the Iranians have developed is they're heavily dug in, and once they use them, they come out of the tunnels, set up, fire their missiles, and then quickly return to cover again. Israel has made a zero dent in Iran's missile capabilities or launch capability. But again, journalists aren't interested in this kind of complexity. Nor do they understand any conception of this. And beyond that, don't forget, the journalists are embedded. They're embedded either with the U.S. military or the Israeli military, so nothing they say can be believed or trusted. Keep in mind, too, that the Hezbollah war, which hasn't ended really, by the way, Israel failed to knock out any of their underground tunnels. The IDF couldn't destroy the Hamas system in tiny little Gaza. These are highly intelligent, experienced guerrilla fighters, but they're being portrayed as idiots who leave these things out in the open. So the videos that you see, and there are many of them, I've seen many of them, are lies. It's typical wartime propaganda, most countries do it. Israel is far more vulnerable than Iran is. Iran has a superior selection of missiles than either the Americans or the Israelis do. The damage that the Iranians could do is far greater. This is why Israel is censoring its media. There was a total media blackout. I don't know if it's still going on. And there's a threat. I don't want to say it's just discouraging Israelis, but you're not allowed to post evidence of damage on social media. That's why that article above that I quoted, they said that Iran was doing it, even though he was well aware that the Israelis have that policy in place. The only thing of any value that the Israelis did was the decapitation strategy, but I don't know how far is that going to go? This isn't the Middle Ages. These are institutions. They have many generals. They have many admirals. They all come up. They just move up. This isn't, these institutions aren't based on personalities. It sounds great in the media, We talked about Hezbollah being a highly decentralized institution. So murdering Nasrallah, it may have hurt morale for a little bit, but it didn't affect anything. But the U.S. can't keep Israel supplied thanks to its irrational policies in Ukraine and Taiwan. This is oligarchy. This is the irrational foreign policy of oligarchy. The United States doesn't have the industrial capacity to produce more, at least quickly. Russia does, but the U.S. does not. The interceptors are almost out, and when that's the case, Iran will have full control of the sky. In a single day, very recently, I don't remember exactly what day it was early on in the conflict, the Navy launched a full year's worth of ship-to-air Patriots in one day. These are very, very expensive missiles, and the Iranians are just getting started. The media is lying about all of this stuff. So regardless of what happens in Iran, Iran will always achieve, it will destroy Israel's capacity to make war. There's no question that Tel Aviv is going to be destroyed. It didn't want to, but only within a few days did Iran unveil its hypersonics, which are unstoppable. China, Pakistan, Russia, they're delivering more. One of them hit Mossad headquarters just north of Tel Aviv. This Iron Dome propaganda is exactly that. They were already they were running out of ammunition against Hezbollah, let alone Iran. Journalists love the World War III thing. They love talking about it. It makes them, you know, it makes them seem, oh my God, what's happening? You know, it's sophomore crap. It's highly unlikely that Israel will go the nuclear option for a whole bunch of reasons. Pakistan said that it would respond with its own nuclear strike if Israel makes any stupid move like that. But if Israel were to do something that extreme, many things would happen. The Gulf monarchies may be overthrown by those who despise their business ties to Israel, but the outcome of the war won't change. Of course, the aggressor always has the initial advantage, but Iran has recovered. The U.S. can't add very much to this. I strongly doubt that the U.S., I mean, it may happen, but if it does, it's a testament to the power of the Jews, but I don't see it. It still won't change the outcome, though. There is a possibility that Netanyahu's government will finally fall over this. The Americans don't want their weakness to be exposed. Not to mention, they don't want their high-tech stuff strewn all over Iran. I mean, it's possible, American involvement, but I don't think it's likely. What we've seen here is a war using entirely missiles of various types, including intercontinental. The U.S. is the only country that operates them in a land-based configuration. But remember, the Minuteman III IBM, they're over 50 years old. The Sentinel is supposed to replace them, but just like all the other modernizations and new designs, it's a disaster. I talked about this with the U.S. Navy many times. The Sentinel's being put together by the Northrop Grumman Corporation, and now they are way, way over budget. It's supposed to be the ground-based strategic deterrent, which is a huge project undertaken by a country that doesn't have any money. The cost overruns have been massive, endless delays, and issues with basic technologies that really shouldn't be a problem for a modern state. You even have people talking about the retirement of the Minuteman III system and just have, you know, not have the land base for a little while, just rely on the submarines. Just strategic bombers and submarine-launched ballistic missiles. I mean, the UK and France rely on these, not that they ever going to use them or need them, but it is less expensive. But as I've been saying for a long time, the U.S. and Israel are now faced with at least peer adversaries on numerous fronts. The Sentinel's an interesting case. I talked about the collapse of the American military-industrial complex, and this is just one other example. The Sentinel was supposed to replace the Minuteman in 2030, but that's not going to happen now. Actually, it was supposed to be 2026, but they pushed it back to 2030. It had a massive 81% cost increase last year. And I read the GAO report published on June 11th of this year. I don't know if you guys know what the Nunn-McCurdy breach is. It's named after Sam Nunn, who, when I was in college, was the head of the Armed Services Committee. A Nunn-McCurdy breach occurs when a major military program exceeds its budget, and when it does so, it triggers a reporting requirement for the Department of Defense, hence necessitating a hearing. So if it's 15% or more, it's considered significant. If it's 25% or more, it's critical. Well, we're talking about 85% here. Now, in a case of a critical breach, the program must be terminated. American missile technology, now we're speaking more broadly here, is 50 years behind the RS-24 Yars. It is hypersonic, and it maneuvers and it deploys hypersonic glide vehicles. It's a modular design. And it can serve as a non-nuclear strike platform. The Oreshnik can as well. The LGM version of the Sentinel is supposed to be cheaper and more advanced, but it turned out to be the total opposite. It was totally unreliable and far more expensive. In 2020, it was $118 million per missile, already 80% higher than the Minuteman. And then that grew to $162 million that very same year. And then they stopped reporting it. They're not disclosing any further cost overruns. So we're probably at $200, $250 million for one Sentinel. And it's 700% more expensive than the far more advanced Russian RS-24 Yars. The USAF is even thinking about keeping the old Minuteman in service. They want it until 2050. That means it'll be 80 years old by the time it's retired, if there is a U.S. by that point. Russia has so much to call upon. I want to make a point about the RS-28 Sarmat. That's their super heavy ICBM, standing in a league of its own. Now, when this first came out, the media, almost to a man, especially the Christian media, claimed that Sarmat meant Satan. And to this day, it's still being referred to as the Sarmat or RS-28 Satan. It is not. Sarmat is in reference to the Sarmatians, a tribe of that settled in Poland. But it has no competitors at this point. Unlimited range. Payload capacity is beyond conception. Hypersonic maneuvering warheads. Its so-called fractional orbital bombardment system. Nothing's close to it. Not to mention the Poseidon nuclear-tipped underwater drones. China and North Korea have gone way beyond the U.S. in this department. So if the Sentinel's ever deployed, it'll already be outdated and ridiculously overpriced. But given the trajectory of American military failure, if you remember my discussion of the littoral combat ship and the other one, I can't remember what that is now. Well, it's never going to see the light of day. Now, what do I say all this? This isn't just a matter of current events. We're talking about the decline of empire. These are all pieces of the puzzle. The U.S. can't help the Israelis. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the Navy is very close to being out of its main missile defense projectiles. Iran then brings out it. That's why it's probably waited to bring out its hypersonics, which are you can't do anything about anyway. The U.S. is in no position to fight a major first world power like Iran, since the U.S. is not a first world power. The regime just can't accept the reality that they've lost this arms race. You know, Reagan was a long time ago. Even Desert Shields was a long time ago. The Americans could not put that together today. Just like the British couldn't put together the Falklands flotilla today. The larger hypersonics from Russia and China can sink or severely damage a U.S. aircraft carrier anywhere on the planet. And there's no reliable way to stop them. So what does that say about American power projection? I mean, the U.S., of course, has plenty of advantages. But its hegemony is, I don't care how many aircraft carriers they bring around. With the level of pilot shortage and the terrible condition of its warplanes, I don't know what's underneath them. Donald Trump doesn't seem to be able to understand this. And the Israelis are at the core of it. Now, many of you have heard Donald Trump has dismissed his own intelligence services, poor as they are, regarding the stupid nuclear issue. Tulsi Gabbard, who, by the way, I was the first to bring to public attention, when she said her first kind of non-politically correct thing on the Syrian war, she had just been elected to Congress, and I mentioned her. I had it on Facebook, and when I still had a Facebook. And I talked about her, and all of a sudden, then she explodes in a good way. But it was back in March when their report came out. Iran was not building a nuclear weapon. And Trump said, I don't care what you said. We know they were very close to getting a nuke, and by which he means a nuclear weapon. I've been hearing this from the Netanyahus of the world since I was in college. It's like a boilerplate line for the Israeli state. It's been known for decades. You know, Gabbard is in a position to coordinate all American intelligence services, part of the reform after 9/11. She went in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee and said just that. It isn't happening. The Supreme Leader has not authorized this. If it ever existed, it was suspended in 2003. Now, what reason would Trump have to reject that unless he's just getting different intelligence from other unknown sources, that is to say, the Israelis? Now, I've read the 2025 annual threat assessment. That's the report that contains that line that they're not building a nuclear weapon. And it was shocking. I felt dumber after reading it. I've read assessments like this in years ago that weren't written at the third grade level. Everything there seems to be taken from major media and propaganda. It doesn't come from actual intelligence. Like, for example, it claims the absurd casualty figure of 750,000 for Russia and Ukraine. I don't think Russia ever had that many men in total in the area. Then it says, quote, the war in Ukraine has sapped Russia's finances and available military resources to fulfill its Arctic ambitions, prompting Russia to seek a closer partnership with China in the Arctic. None of that is even slightly true. Oh, and here's my favorite. This is from Gabbard's, 2025, threat assessment. And she says, Moscow probably believes information operations efforts to influence U.S. elections are advantageous, regardless of whether they affect election outcomes, because reinforcing doubt in their integrity of the U.S. electoral system achieves one of its core objectives. Huh. So, is this administration now promoting this? That's what it says. I couldn't believe it, but I had to read it three times. In the threat assessment, this is exactly what it says. And Gabbard has her signature on it and everything. If this is the best that intelligence can do, it's in more trouble than even I realized. Oh, it also says, quote, Russia is using AI to create highly capable deepfakes to spread disinformation, conduct malign influence operations, and stoke further fear. Russia has also demonstrated the use of AI-enabled anti-drone equipment during its ongoing conflict with Ukraine. If there's anything that talks about projection, it's that the only decent insight it has is that Iran is not pursuing nuclear weaponry. However, in that same paragraph, it also says, Iran very likely aims to continue research and development of chemical and biological agents for offensive purposes. So even that is vitiated by that comment. Now, there's no evidence for any of this. There's no footnotes. There's no bibliography. It's not written in your normal style. The only thing I can come up with is that this has been disseminated as propaganda to the media. There might be a real report that's classified that we can't see right now. But this sounds like a kid in college. I don't know what else to say. It's not to be taken seriously. The spillover effects of this, many of you may have heard of Colonel Nathan McCormick, who has now officially been relieved of his position. He was head of the Levant and Egypt branch, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, J5 Planning Directorate. He was removed from his position for telling the truth. And the truth, he said, he criticized Washington's unwavering support for Israel on social media. He said, our worst ally, we get literally nothing out of the partnership with Israel, other than the enmity of millions of people in the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. Well, no kidding. Now, they were discovered by the Jewish News Syndicate. In other words, Jews are constantly searching for this, especially for military men. kind of an anonymous Twitter account allegedly linked to him. Israel is very concerned with American military perceptions of this war. But of course, everything he said was true anyway. He said, the U.S. has not been an honest broker. We have overwhelmingly enabled Israel's bad behavior. This is a senior military official now. He has every right to say this. He talks about Netanyahu as Judeo supremacists who are determined to prolong the conflict for their own goals, either to remain in power or to annex the land. Israel's actions over the course of decades have prompted the accusations of ethnic cleansing and genocide. Well, no kidding. These are all obvious truths. He's been removed from his position. The Defense Department is assigning an investigative officer to examine the content and its implications. Well, this is part of the colonel's job. This is part of his assessment. He's trying to save his men from going to war for this terror state. And the U.S. trying to make a big... It's not even just protected by the First Amendment. And it's not just because it's true. But this is his job. He has every right to these kind of opinions. That's why he's been promoted to colonel. But it also means that there's Jews who are constantly searching various blogs and I'm sure emails of military men trying to uncover anything remotely negative about them. And all of this for a country that has never threatened the U.S. in any way, shape, matter, or form. Trump insists that Iran has to eliminate all enrichment activities. In other words, it's not allowed to have a nuclear program of any type. The U.S. is in no position to say that. I guess they don't like to be reminded of the fact that they have a huge scientific establishment, and the nuclear part of it has been killed. Many of them have. Remember, these are institutions, not individuals. Trump said, I didn't say I was looking for a ceasefire. Macron mistakenly said, I left the G7 summit in Canada and go back to D.C. to work on a ceasefire between Israel and Iran. Wrong. He has no idea why I'm on my way to Washington. But it certainly has nothing to do with the ceasefire. It's much bigger than that. Now, I don't know what he means there, but he doesn't seem to have a clue about the limitations of American military power. Or anything else for that matter. He doesn't realize how the West has been backed into a corner of its own doing. And this is, at the same time Trump issued, I never even thought of anyone doing this before. He personally issued a bizarre warning to the whatever it is, 10 million inhabitants of Tehran to immediately evacuate their city. I've never heard of that. I've never anyone, a politician, issuing an evacuation order for a foreign city. He's sending this unqualified billionaire envoy, Steve Witkoff, for de-escalation, but we all know what that means. Unless Iran completely surrenders everything, there is no negotiating, because there is no negotiating with the regime. And Trump is no different than anyone else. Tehran has no obligations to hostile foreign powers that only seek its destruction. It has every right to retaliate against U.S. military bases across the Middle East if its soil is attacked by the U.S. directly. We've talked about this many times in the past, that even neocons realize how badly vulnerable these bases are. Iran could annihilate American bases in the Gulf states and elsewhere in a very short period of time. I mean, I'm sure they know that Washington is already taking part in these Israeli strikes. But that could mean anything from just intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, or even just direct involvement. That's always a line that you have in places like Ukraine, trying to maintain that line, which has been blurred. But, you know, he's no different. This level of aggression is bizarre. He's broken his main fundamental campaign promise over nothing. This shows the utter control, the domineering nature of the Jewish population over American foreign policy. Despite the fact that Gentile Americans want nothing to do with this. Democrats want to talk about their opposition to any kind of an attack, but Democratic administrations have been the same. Liberals have been the same. They hate Iran for a different set of reasons. Biden talked about it too, or I'm sorry, you know, people who control Biden talked about it. But of course, an attack like this has to be planned months in advance. This just doesn't happen. Many of you know the Axios news agency. That's close to the Israeli government. Mossad had been preparing this assault for about 8 months before it was launched, which is a minimum amount of time you would expect. I mean, Jewish interests are dominant no matter who's running the White House. Let's get that clear. Also, there's no question. The similarities, and I've said this on the Daily Nationalist, among other places, the similarities between the Iranian attack on the one hand, or the Israeli attack on Iran on the one hand, and Kiev's attack on Russia on the other, they are very similar. Clearly, these are both Mossad, these are both Jewish operations. Jews are running the show both in Tel Aviv and Kiev, let alone Washington. Trump's second administration is Jewish, and those who aren't Jewish are fanatically Zionist. Now I have, this may be slightly outdated, but the Jewish Telegraphic Agency and the Jewish Forward have listed the Jews in Trump's cabinet, especially those involved in foreign policy. We have. Of course, Jared Kushner still retains a great deal of influence. Stephen Miller, Chief of Staff and Homeland Security Advisor. David Friedman, who is Trump's bankruptcy lawyer, somehow is qualified to be a part of the diplomatic delegation to Israel. It's like Witkoff. Other than being billionaires, that's the only qualification they seem to have. Witkoff is another fanatic, totally unqualified. Howard Lutnick is Secretary of Commerce, which is important because they deal with, along with the Treasury, they deal with sanctions. Will Scharf is an important staff secretary. Morgan Ortegas, a special envoy to the Middle East. She used to be an evangelical who converted to Judaism for religious for career reasons. I don't think that was much of a shock or much of a change in her world. Adam Bowler, who was an envoy for hostage affairs. EPA under Lee Zeldin. Scott Bessant, the Treasury Secretary, a student of George Soros and an open fag, by the way. Jared Isaacman is the head of NASA now, which NASA is part of the radar and detection system of the U.S. military. They're not irrelevant. David Sachs, White House AI and crypto leader. Chris Landau, Deputy Secretary of State. Jason Greenblatt, longtime head of the Trump Organization. Steven Feinberg, Jewish billionaire investor, somehow is Deputy Defense Secretary despite not knowing anything about defense. Gary Cohn running the White House Economic Council. Then you have guys like Avram Berkowitz and Boris Epstein. They're like special assistants. Now, Avram Berkowitz is 27 years old. Epstein is a little older. They have vague roles. They're kind of wanderers in the administration. I don't know what they do, but they're certainly powerful. The U.S. doesn't want any of this, but the Jews do. The regime is entirely on board with this, and as far as anyone can tell, about 85% of the people remaining in Israel who haven't left yet are supportive of what's happening both in Gaza and in Iran. There is no popular support, though, in France, Germany, the U.K., U.S., for any kind of action like this, any kind of escalation. Terrorism is normal now. It's been normalized in Israel, Kiev, and the U.S. As I predicted, as the West weakens, it's going to lash out like a wounded animal. The decapitation strategy, this strategic elimination of much of the top leadership, the Iranian and Hezbollah leader, militia, army. It's mass murder, of course. The axis of resistance, of course, is much larger than Iran, Hezbollah, and Saleh. Hamas, you know, it's much larger than that. It goes to Russia and China, not to mention you and me. But the initial attacks on Iran took place in these bad faith negotiations. that were just cover. He pretended to be engaged in an attempt to help lay the foundations for peace, but he knew that his agenda couldn't be accepted. It was just simply a distraction. Pretending that this is a preemptive strike, again, is a abuse of the word. It's not, you know, people stop talking about international law or illegal. There is no, international law doesn't matter. Nothing is illegal in the international world. It's only that it's a rule of the stronger, unfortunately. Calling something illegal, that's just for emotional, rhetorical reasons. International law is irrelevant. But going beyond that, just basic decency is being violated. But Iran, like Russia, was prospering under sanctions and her economy need to be damaged. Now, there was an Israeli cyber attack, a successful one, on the computer network of Iran's security apparatus. Unfortunately, it took about 7 hours to get it back online again. And Israel's early victories came from this computer collapse. For a few hours, it was defunct. So those at the top of the chain of command were either murdered or simply incapable of action until everything came back online again. The fact that many of these men were killed in their homes shows that these are terrorist actions after all. Leaders of the Revolutionary Guard Corps, something that came out of the war with Iraq. You know, a lot of the Iranian mentality in terms of warfare came out of that brutal, needless slaughter in the 1980s that the U.S. and the Israelis were supporting both sides to kill as many people as possible. The Iranians came to despise chemical warfare. Even the possession of weapons of mass destruction for the Iranians was an outrage, including nuclear weapons. I've already been through, I think on Thursday, if you've heard, the list of those who have been murdered. Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Hossein Bagheri, Itam Hayaniba, Ghulam al-Rashid, killed with his son, by the way, Brigadier General Amir Hazeda. But the precise nature of the attack is still the subject of some debate. There is an element of Israeli presence in Iran. Iranians, of course, reporting to Mossad, at least some of them, already had drones and even small missiles used in these attacks. Now, the terrorist part came from the murder of the nuclear scientists, since, as I said before, none of these men were engaged in or even trained in nuclear weaponry. The Iranians realize that the oil is not going to last forever. Therefore, there needs to be another source for Iran's future. Nuclear option is a smart option. But that just shows a prosperous society, an irrational society, and therefore it has to be destroyed. You can't just switch over from civilian nuclear power to nuclear weapons. It's a completely different thing. Now, if Iran has its back to the wall, things may change. Israel may have brought about a change of heart with its barbarism. There is a schism within Iranian society, within elite society. More religious, more secular. We know what the Shah did, creating a secular, almost attempting to be a liberal Iran in enlightened absolutism kind of a method, free international trade, all this stuff. Messian wrote a report in Therian. Messian wrote in Voltairenet, I think. In 2011, the head of the Iranian counter-espionage in charge of combating Mossad infiltration who was appointed was an Israeli agent. He remained in office until 2021. And he now lives in Israel. He surrounded himself with a team of about 20 people who fled with him to Israel. They were the ones who organized the assassinations of the nuclear scientists and the theft of the archives exhibited by Benjamin Netanyahu. There's always going to be this commercially driven faction, the rule of the sea, the Atlantis, in any large, prosperous country. This goes back even to the Iran-Contra scandal, which was completely created by Israel. The creation of a moderate wing within, even with after 1979. Messian also says this. The Iranians don't want to destroy their rivals, so they've gotten into the habit, when the two groups come into conflict, of creating a commission to reconcile them. So it generally doesn't succeed, and on the contrary, itself comes into conflict with another institution. They create a fourth, and so on. In the end, they obtain a very complex organizational chart in which the slightest decision requires a dozen signatures, and no one ever manages to gather all of them. The system thus blocks itself. Messian said in late 2024, you know, of course, long before the attacks occurred, he said, under these conditions, it's not surprising that an Iranian source informed Israel the places and times where it could assassinate the leaders of Hezbollah one by one, especially since the Supreme Leader is currently negotiating with the Biden administration with the idea of reaching an agreement before November 5th, date of the election. That is to say, the pro-U.S. faction today more powerful than ever in Tehran. That might explain the effective methods of assassination. The same thing occurred in 1990 in Iraq, starting with Nasrallah and then of course Soleimani in 2020. Well, of course, there's always competent men to replace them. Again, they're institutions. These aren't just individual personalities. That's not the point. It does create confusion. Nasrallah was actually killed in an underground bunker. Thousands of civilians were killed in that strike. The Iranian missile attacks, by the way, are showing that the Israelis are hiding their installations in heavily settled urban areas, including in hospitals. Now, that shouldn't surprise anybody, that everything they said about their own destruction of hospitals, whether it be in Lebanon or in Gaza, which were targeted specifically, they were doing it because they, in fact, have their people in hospitals. I don't want to exaggerate, though, the decapitation's effects. The Guardian, British newspaper, June 14th, he said this. The author was Melman. He said, over decades, the Mossad has built up deep networks of informants, agents, and logistics in Iran. This allowed a series of operations, including the assassination with a remote-controlled automatic machine gun on top of an Iranian nuclear scientist traveling at speed in a car in a remote road, the infection with malware computers running key parts of Iran's nuclear program, and a theft of the archive of nuclear documents. Last year, Ismail Haniyeh, the political leader of Hamas, was assassinated with a bomb placed in his favorite room in a government guest house in Tehran. Now, what does that tell you? Can we go so far as to say that Iran is not doing enough to deal with high-level Israeli spying within their organization? Melman. Now, I don't know how he knows this precisely, but he says those who are doing this are not Israeli. They're Persian. Mossad, you know, Friday the 13th operation, very similar to the attacks that we saw in Russia. Jews are in both areas. Mossad, of course, the headquarters has been destroyed, and some of its underlings have been destroyed. But there seems to be an unwillingness to deal with this at the highest levels in Iranian society. When the new president of Iran was inaugurated in Tehran, the Israeli decapitation team singled out the Hamas leader, Haniyeh, July of 2024. But the Israeli, those assassins were, they knew his life patterns in Tehran. So you had to have been on the inside. They even, you know, they've been debating killing the Supreme Leader. That might be a problem. But there is some explanation for the early successes, and it is not the superiority of the Western world or of the Israeli military. It is the rule by deceit, warfare by deceit, warfare by deception. Now, there's many details that we don't know yet. I'm giving you the basic thumbnail here. But if there were any victories early on in Israel's initial attack on Friday the 13th, it was because their computer system had been crashed. I don't see Iran doing that to Israel. Of course, I don't have to tell any of you that none of this has anything to do with America First. What does America First mean? It's nationalism. To make domestic problems the priority. Not to be involved in foreign entanglements that don't really affect the U.S. But foreign entanglements are supported by Jewish power, and we know who's going to win there. But Trump has completely eliminated any foreign policy promise that he made in a campaign trail is gone. Even more so if he decides to use American assets, which I don't think he will, but it's very possible. I love the idea that Trump's supporters are split. That's fine by me. They're being radicalized, and I think that the group of people who aren't buying even the, you know, conservative point of view, because I'm not particularly fond of conservatives. I know too much about them. Many of them are Protestant evangelicals and free markets and usury and Jews. Democrats are the real racists, that kind of thing. But if they could be purged, that would be wonderful. No more wars for Israel. The U.S. got no oil out of that area. And the left knew it when they invented their no war for oil nonsense. There's an exhaustion with imperial overreach. The idea that the dividends of any kind of global policing no longer justify its mounting costs. Of course, I heard that in 1992 as well. But none of this removes the concept, the idea, the reality that the U.S. is in deep decline and the Iranians are, in fact, winning this war. And that's a good thing. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.